You are listening to Flipside. I'm Todd Steed, and I admit it, I play Fender guitars. Just a little disclosure there, because today I'm talking with Phyllis Fender, the wife of Leo Fender, the man that built the Fender guitar empire. Her new book is called Leo Fender, The Quiet Giant Heard Around the World, co-written with Randall Bell, who's quite an expert on guitars himself. And I believe someone is on the phone waiting to talk to us. Who is that on the other end of the phone in Fullerton, California?
This is Phyllis Fender in Fullerton, California.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Oh, it's going to be wonderful. Thank you so much for thinking about it.
Yeah, well, I'm ready to get going unless you're not.
Randy's right here, so.
So we got Randy there, too. Hey, we're talking with Randy Bell and Phyllis Fender. And Phyllis, I'm glad you're here with us on the phone because technically, according to the doctors, you're not supposed to be here at all.
No, they said I had 3 to 6 months, and that was 25 years or 26 years ago. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Why do you think they got it wrong?
They forgot to ask Jesus if my time was up.
Yeah, they never give you enough time in those meetings anyway. Did that give you a new lease on life when you realized, hey, I've got more than 6 months? Did that change your perspective on what you wanted to do with your life?
Well, what the whole thing, when somebody tells you you have 3 to 6 months to live, you set your priorities completely different. I took everything negative out of my life, people that bugged me, things that I maybe should have apologized for, I took care of. I made sure my kids were well taken care of, you know, that kind of stuff. And surprise, surprise, I'm still here. And it made me change the order of things in my life. Only positive things now. I try to be involved with helping more people, understanding more people. And actually, it was, and I did do a series, a speaking tour on, it was the best thing that ever happened, and everybody should have a death sentence given to them because you do change the bad stuff in your life. And I spoke at several churches on you're responsible for your own happiness, and so get to it.
That's right. If you want to write a book, go ahead and write it. Right.
Right. If Randy hadn't met me up at the museum, I don't know.
Well, tell me how that.
He's a good pusher.
Well, tell me how that came about. Why this book, and why are y'all writing it now?
Well, why the book? I had written another book that was used in a guitar for Leo's 100th birthday, and they had made a G&L had started a beautiful guitar to honor Leo. And they always put a gift inside their guitars that they're doing honors for. And it would be some kind of little present. And so they asked me if they could use that book and print it, which they did. And when Randy and I started talking about the book, I brought it with him one day to show him, and he liked the way I was writing and the things that I had talked about, personal things of Leo's. And it just felt special, like it's time that people knew that there was somebody besides a silent Leo. There was a Leo that loved children. There was a Leo that loved to travel. There was a Leo that loved to eat. And Randy had the same feelings because his family was so involved with Leo and the companies. It just, that day at the museum when he picked me up, I hadn't been picked up in ages, you know. And we just got together there one day when I was doing a tour in the Fullerton Museum in the Fender Gallery. and it just snapped, and we both just said, let's do something. Randy mostly. I was a little shy sometimes, and it just worked out wonderfully, and I'm so pleased.
It's a wonderful book, and it's very personal, and it's very funny. There's all sorts of great laughs in there. I'm wondering, in the process of writing this book, with you and Dr. Bell putting this book together, are there things that you discovered you hadn't really thought about or knew before?
There were a few things about the business portion of Leo that I didn't particularly know about. I didn't really have any business with him. He wanted me to come and work with him at the plant, but I was working for my father at the time, and so I didn't go down there. So I knew all the personal things, and Randy knew all the business things, and just worked out good.
One of the things that really struck me about this book, and it was the fact that Leo Fender never really let money change who he was or change the business. It just seems like, you know, he kept in a small office, and if I'm correct, there's no window in there to the outside.
It's really ugly.
What, I mean, was he that frugal, or did he just prefer simplicity, or what was it?
Well, you know, he came from a farm family. His parents, I never met them. They were gone before I had met Leo. They were very low income people. There were farmers. His father was vegetable and fruit farmer in Fullerton. And they didn't have a lot of extra money, and they were very careful. And so Leo kept those things, not because he couldn't buy a boat or couldn't do this or that. By that time when he started working with the guitars, and then later when I met him, he just wanted to make the best instruments he could, and that's all he focused on. Celebrity, big houses, big money, big whatever. Only thing that was big was he liked big white cars.
Was that his only extravagance, or did he have anything else?
No, not really. We did like to go on cruises. We were married on the Love Boat, and then went on a cruise from California down the Mexican coast and through the canal into the Caribbean. And then we went on 10 cruises after that all around the world. So travel probably, I would say, would be his thing that he liked to do.
I was kind of fascinated because I can just imagine a never-ending line of celebrities coming through the factory. And the story about Prince, can you tell me about when Prince came through?
Yeah, that's the story people like to hear, because it seems Prince was so elevated in today's world. Prince had come to the Fender factory and wanted to talk to Leo. He had spoken actually to Randy's dad for most of the day, and he wanted to talk to Leo about something about the guitar. And so Randy's dad and I don't know, maybe a couple other guys went in and said, Leo, you know, Prince is here. He needs to talk to you about the guitar. And Leo said, Prince who and who cares, basically. I meant he probably thought the Prince of England, who knows, I don't know. But Leo said, no, I'm busy. And Randy's dad went out and told Prince that, you know, Leo was busy. Prince said, I'm going to stay here till I talk to him. I need to talk to him. So they went back in and convinced Leo he should come out for a moment. So he came out, and they said, this is Prince. And Leo said, hello. And Prince said, I want you to promise me something. And Leo looked at them strangely. And, well, I think he probably looked at Prince strangely anyway. But he said, I want you to promise me that you'll never make anybody else a purple guitar like mine, like the one you made to me. And Leo looked at him and said, okay. And he turned around and walked back into his office. And that's all he said to Prince was, okay. And he never, as far as I know, he never made another purple guitar like that one.
Now, I mean, I grew up playing a Fender Stratocaster, and now I'm a Telecaster guy. But if you would have told me when I was 17 years old that Leo Fender did not know how to play guitar, I would have not believed you.
I know, and he doesn't know. He never knew how to tune one either.
Well, I didn't know how to tune one.
He had many men in the factory that played guitars. They almost every all the guys out there were playing in some kind of small groups, and of course they had Fender guitars or G&L, either one, and so it just worked out, and it was a fun place to be.
Well, I got to ask you this: if he didn't play guitar, why did he invent guitars? What drove him to that? That's kind of amazing.
Well, it was because he was at a musical place in time during World War II, and the guitars players were in a band, and everybody is playing like crazy, and you can hear all the music, and you can't hear the guitar players at all. And they're in the front row, and they're playing their little fingers off. And he was only a few seats away, and he couldn't hear them. He could hear the horns. He could hear the drums. He could hear all this other stuff. Couldn't hear the guitar players. And as it was, he spoke to them for a few minutes after the performance. And they were complaining about they were working so hard and not being heard. And the next day, they happened to come into his radio shop for some special reason he never said. And it got him thinking, you know, that wasn't fair. Those guys were working hard and nobody could hear them. So he grabbed a hunk of wood and carved out the belly of it and stuck some electrical stuff in there and said, okay, now let's see what we can do by making this electrical. And that was how everything started, because he saw, I think there was three or four of the guitar players playing that they couldn't hear. And he said, that's not fair. And so he started making a guitar because it wasn't fair to these guys not to be heard.
Well, what did he think about when people like Pete Townsend and Jimi Hendrix are smashing these wonderful instruments that make people so happy? What did he think about that era or that type of behavior?
He didn't smile much. He thought of those instruments as his children. He and the first Mrs. Fender had no children, and so the guitars became his children. And you can imagine what a father would think of if that somebody was lighting their children on fire or smashing them on the floor or something. He was not a happy man. He appreciated his talents and that he could get a good music, but he didn't like what happened to the instruments. He thought that was just really awful.
Did he have a favorite of his guitars? I mean, he made so many great ones and so many different variations. Did he have one that he put above all others?
Well, maybe Randy might know more about that, more about the instruments part.
Well, I think his favorite guitar was the next one. He was always inventing. You know, he came out with the Esquire, which turned into the Telecaster in 1950, and then the Stratocaster he invented with Freddie Trivars in 1954, and in between there was the bass. But, you know, the Mustang, the Jazzmaster, the Jaguar, he was just constantly inventing, and he never kept one of them because he always thought the next one would be better.
Was he working on anything special near the end of his life that he didn't finish?
Well, he actually passed away here in the Fender home where we are now, getting ready to go to work. He had just finished inventing a new guitar, which is on display in the Fullerton Museum. And frankly, nobody knows what it is. I was just talking to the CEO of G&L, and I asked him if he could build one for me. And he said, we just don't know what it is. We don't have the tooling for it. It's kind of a cross between a Stratocaster and a bass. It's kind of a baritone guitar. It's thicker than normal strings, but it's not a bass. It's a very odd guitar, and I think it was Leo's way of saying, hey, I'm checking out, but I'm going to leave you guys with a mystery. You guys figure it out.
I bet it's wonderful. I mean, I always love sort of like those baritone-type sounds on guitars.
Well, it's being shown at the Fullerton Museum. So if anybody goes through there, at least they can see it.
What would I see if I went to the Fullerton Museum?
Well, they have the front part of the museum is exhibits that are exchanged constantly. I'm a docent there, and so that's how I got involved with this. But they, several years ago, decided to have a Fender gallery there. So they've left the back part of the museum for Leo and things about Leo. First time they had it full of just all kinds of instruments, the Fender Rhodes piano and basses and amplifiers, all kinds of things. And they change it around. At the moment right now, you would see in a special room, they've recreated his office, and they have all kinds of things that he kept in his office, his jackets and blueprints on the wall and things like that. I haven't been down there lately working. I need to get back or I might get fired, but I usually tell stories in the museum. And we'll have a whole room full of people. And it's like us talking now. What was Leo like? What was his favorite things? And so that's what we do for an hour or so. We'll just tell a story. And I'm very appreciative and very pleased with the way the museum has had that. And just a few weeks ago, we had a book signing there. And that was great fun, too.
It sounds like he worked a lot, and he worked, you know, he was always thinking about work. Do you think there was anything on the other side of that that maybe had some sort of social anxiety or you know, was that was a way of...
No, he didn't have any kind of anxieties of any kind. He just enjoyed what he was doing. He always felt, as Randy said, that the next guitar was going to be the best guitar. And he truly believed that. And he believed that that was his job in life, was to make the best guitar for musicians. It brought him great joy to see the acceptance of his instruments. It did it made our home life a little different, because sometimes he would be working on a job and I'd see him not for a couple of days. But again, we took a lot of cruises, and he got to work on the cruises, and I got a suntan. So it all came out even.
What do you miss most about Leo Fender?
I miss him seeing our grandkids. He and Esther Fender had no children. And so when he married me, he got a whole big, big, big family. And he used to hold these children in his lap and just said, I never knew, because they had chosen not to have children. It's so wonderful. I wish I'd known. And so to see the look in his eyes when he first held a baby, it was just unbelievably wonderful.
We've been talking with Randall Bell and Phyllis Fender. Their new book is called Leo Fender, The Quiet Giant Heard Around the World. And I've read the book. I loved it. I just wanted to thank you both for all that you've done and keeping this going.
Oh, well, you keep playing, because that'll keep Leo alive.
I will do just that.
Okay.
Thank you, Todd.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.